Hey guys, this is Ishai Breslauer and welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. On Mondays, we dive deep into an asset class, and on Thursdays, we go into some inspirational stories for the weekend. Can't wait to start. Let's go. Hey guys, before we continue, I would like to introduce you to the 7-day CRE Challenge, which will introduce you to commercial real estate and will show you that anyone can do this. Also, I have the free cheat sheet for commercial real estate with the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. You can download it free. Just click below or above, wherever it is, and get it. Let's continue. Hey guys, how are you? This is your host, Ishai Breslauer, with the CRE Shark Eye Show, talking commercial real estate. And today we have a special guest, Shimon Shkuri, who we know each other for a while, for quite a while. Shimon is the president at Ariel Property Advisors, and a veteran of the New York market, and a very interesting brokerage that he has that services so many people that I know, and he has quite a team he has there, and we want to hear his story. We want to hear what's going on in the market. That's everything we're going to talk about today. So let's dive right into it. Shimon, thank you so much for being on the show, giving us your time. Your valuable time. And let's start with, first of all, how'd you get into this whole thing? I know Shimon Shkuri is an Israeli guy, right? Today, New Yorker. But how'd you get into this?
Ishai, first of all, thank you for having me today.
Pleasure.
How did I get to this thing? I came here to study. I did my MBA here in the States. And after my MBA, I had an opportunity to be in an investment bank for about 6 months or 8 months until I got laid off. I got laid off right after September 11th.
Wow.
In September of 2001. And one of the things I wanted to do is be more entrepreneurial. And I joined an entrepreneurial company that does commercial brokerages at the time called Massey Knackel, which ended up selling to Cushman Wakefield down the road. And I liked that company and became a partner there 2 years after I joined. And in January of 2011, took a part of my team and started Ariel Property Advisors. And that's how I got into real estate, with the belief that, commercial brokerage, when you talk about selling buildings or financing buildings, has to go hand in hand with providing advisory and providing information to clients, which is something that I think the market craves. I mean, we, at the end of the day, we're brokering deals, but before we broker deals and during that time, we provide a lot of information because we're on the ground and we have the ability to do so. So that's how I got into this.
That's interesting. First of all, that's in a nutshell. Multiple causes, we call it. But the more interesting, before we dive into the interesting part and the numbers and everything that goes on, I'm interested to hear, because your team is quite a team. And, I remember getting calls when I was running the company in New York, which I did previous to COVID, got numerous calls from you guys. I have a deal here. I have a deal here. And there are a bunch of guys. How a broker guy who is out of an investment bank, guy laid off and opens a firm. Okay, very nice. A lot of people have a firm. A lot of people give that service. A lot of people are smart. A lot of people know their numbers. A lot of people know the market. Cool. What got you to get such a team, and at which point this, I would say, solopreneur, or you and another guy or two, all of a sudden became Ariel Property Advisors, which you guys are today?
Yeah, I think you hit it. I think you hit it right. I mean, it's the people, right? It's the team. It's how you look at your platform. So I look at Ariel Property Advisors as a platform, and essentially I partner up with people. So first of all, I have partners in the platform, and these are brokers who I started with many, many years ago, and today they own a piece of that platform. So I have 3 partners in Ariel Property Advisors: Victor Sozio, Mike Tortorici, and Ivan Petrovic. We wish to have more partners in the platform, because that means that the more people produce, we want them to be a partner in the platform and own a piece of the platform. I think that makes sense. And then the way we look at the platform is as a service provider to the brokers. So we look at Ariel Property Advisors as a machine that helps the brokers better service their clients. So yes, we have clients as a company, but at the end of the day, our biggest service is to the brokers and to the professionals of that organization. The other thing we do is we really pay attention to values and to culture and doing the right thing and being a part of the community. So we're involved in the community on a regular basis, and could be the New York community, it could be the Israeli community, it could be anything that you feel connected to, but really important to be very connected and help the organizations that are within your domain. So if you work in Harlem, or if you work in Bed-Stuy, or if you work in Upper Manhattan or in Manhattan, you want to be a part of a community. And these are part of the things I think are a differentiator for us.
Very important. Tell me something. You know, we went through a lot of stuff lately. And before we go through a lot of stuff that we went through and what the market is looking like today, I want to ask you, you know, let's focus on what you guys do exactly. Because, you know, you have in commercial real estate, you have a lot of asset classes. What is your focus, the day-to-day, day in and day out?
Great. So REO Property Advisors is a 60-person operation with three divisions. The first one is investment sales. So we have brokers that focus on sub areas, on geographic areas, and that's how we figure it is the right way to develop expertise. Each one of these brokers knows their sub-market inside out, and that's a very nice competitive advantage. On the investment sales side, the partners usually focus on the bigger deals, on the institutional deals. So Victor and Mike and myself are usually focused on the bigger deals. And also, we have a very sharp focus in general as a company in the multifamily asset class. And within the multifamily asset class, also within a subsegment, which is affordable housing. So we do all product types, but within the multifamily asset class in affordable housing, we have a sharper focus. So that's division number one. Division number two is capital services. These are mortgage brokers, and we started this division about 5 years ago. And these are mortgage brokers who focus on placing debt and equity for our clients as a service. And that goes hand in hand with investment sales, clearly, and provides for much more deeper expertise and deeper client relationship when it comes to financing deals as well as selling deals and understanding how to advise on that. The third division is the investment research division. And why is that in support division, which is really the services that we provide our clients and brokers? That's where we produce a monthly report about the multifamily asset class. That's where we produce quarterly reports about all of New York City, every product type. That's where we produce a lot of asset evaluations for our clients on a regular basis. We have analysts that we're very proud of in terms of their brain power, who can produce a tremendous amount of analytics based on the information that the market provides and we provide, and work hand in hand with the brokers to do so. So these are our three categories, our three divisions, and that's how we operate.
So one thing I want to dive into, first of all, this is very good, and it's very interesting to have those three divisions and one support the other, and to have within those divisions different types of expertise and people who dive into the market in different type of ways. That's very good. I love that. The one thing I want to discuss is the multifamily market, okay? Multifamily market is a very wide market, right? You got the high-rise building, A-class, you got the Bs, and then you got the Cs, and of course you got what you guys call, you know, affordable, et cetera, et cetera. A different type of expertise, and especially in the New York market, you have to really know how to maneuver between the areas and also the asset classes. Can you talk about that a little bit? What do we need to know about that in terms of the market? And when you incorporate that answer, if you could please also dive into what happened during COVID. Why am I saying it? And I'll elaborate, and then I'll let you say everything about it. When it comes to, for example, A class and B class, we know what happened in the city. We would love to hear from you. And when it happened with the C class, then how many people could pay rent? How many people did not pay rent? the affordable, the D, the HUDs, all that stuff, you know, it requires such expertise. And many people who do one don't do the other. And you guys do all of them. And I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, thank you, Isha. I think you touched very nicely on the subsegments of multifamily. And we divide them essentially to three subsegments, and you can divide them further, right? So the first one is free market. And in the free market world, you have the high rises that are class A, you have the low rises, you have the walk-ups, but essentially the units or the majority of the units in the building are free market buildings. So that's subsegment number one. Number two, we have rent stabilized units. So buildings that are predominantly rent stabilized, let's call it 50, 60, 70% of the units are rent stabilized, where you have regulation. And as you know, in 2019, the legislator in Albany put an HSTPA, a Housing Stability and Tenant Protection Act, together to change how these units are being treated. So before HSTPA, rent stabilized units were treated a certain way, which meant that when you had a vacancy, you could increase the rents all the way to free market if you rehab the units. And I'm oversimplifying, but still. And post HSTPA, after the HSTPA in June of 2019, that rule flipped, which means that you never can change the rent on a rent stabilized unit, even if it is vacant. You can only change it based on the rent guidelines. And that's anywhere between 0 to 1%. Maybe now it's going to be 1, 2, or 3%, but still it's a very minuscule amount. That's a big change on rent stabilized. We can touch on it. So that's the second subsegment of multifamily that we look at. The third subsegment is the affordable housing. Within affordable housing, you have a few different iterations. So you have something that's called project-based Section 8, where it's a government contract. It's a HUD building with a government contract. The government pays the majority, HUD pays the majority of the rent. The tenant's still liable for some of the rent. They usually pay on time. The collections in these buildings are usually 100%. You also have within that category, LIHTC deals or Section 42 that are essentially low-income housing tax credits, where, again, you are catering to lower-income families and you have to have income restrictions and so on. So these are the three types. Now, within these three types, you can find a building that has most buildings in New York City that are not pure affordable have a mix of free market and rent stabilized in many cases. Some buildings have, you know, tax abatements that put them into stabilization. So there's a whole mix that you need to really understand.
That's what makes New York so interesting.
Exactly. That's what makes New York so interesting. And so what we've seen during COVID, and that goes to the second part of your question, is as follows. So let's start with HSTPA. That's what we've seen in 2019. It affected rent stabilized apartment buildings only. So essentially, if you had a predominantly rent-stabilized apartment building, you couldn't sell it the way you could before, or the pricing has changed. Why? Because in the past, you could buy a building like this at a very low cap rate with the anticipation of moving rents along the line and turning into fair market. You can't do that anymore. So the expectation now is to have a higher cap rate going in. What that did is essentially put a hold on selling properties in 2019. And because of COVID, also in 2020. So 2020 wasn't a bad year for the rent stabilized market as much as the HSTPA affected it. Rent stabilized units were not affected by vacancy, for example. The units were occupied, but the collections were lower. Not a substantial amount, in many cases, substantial amount, most cases, not a substantial amount. So that's how HSTPA and COVID-19 affected rent stabilized units. Now you go to free market units. They were not affected by HSTPA, but they were affected by vacancy, especially these high rises that you alluded to before in Manhattan below 96th Street. When people left the city in March and April and May and June of 2020, you've seen the vacancy factor goes up drastically. So for example, in January of 2020, in Manhattan below 96th Street, the vacancy was less than 2%, less than 2%, went all the way up to 6%, three times that, all the way to August, September. And it started declining slowly but surely, somewhere in November, December of last year. It's below 5% now. So we went all the way up to 6, and now we're declining, which means people are coming back. The rents have gone down. Not a secret. The rents have gone down. Landlords are providing concessions anywhere between a month to 2.5 or 3 months. So the rents have gone down anywhere between 20 to 30%, and people are coming back, which means that New York City, that the good news is New York City has found its floor. And as of the end of last year, what we're seeing is an increase in value, consistent increase in value, decline in vacancy. So the worst is really behind us. And the third aspect is what was really interesting in the multifamily subsegment, so to speak, is that the affordable housing world did extremely well. So project-based Section 8, for example, because you could count on the collections, you know that you're getting paid no matter what, no matter the pandemic,
right.
You're getting
government
paid.
Government's paid, right.
Yes, and you could finance it without a HUD or agency loans, which are advantageous, longer term, sometimes interest only. And on top of that, in many cases, you have more certainty about the property taxes because you have either things that are called Article 11 or 420Cs that are either tax abatement or rent or shelter taxes, which allow you to predict your taxes. You saw more money going into these deals. And that submarket has done well. You also have mission-driven capital, which is capital that has to invest in affordable housing in this building. So that's kind of an overview of what happened in the past year and a half or two or affected the market a little bit in the multifamily segment.
Very, very, very interesting. What I want to ask you is, right now, what we're looking at, you started talking about this, we see the markets going back in terms of New York City, right? But we have different types of opinions about this. And what I want to ask you, valuations, right? Valuations went down in a way, but still you have forbearance, still you have things happening that are not allowing everything to hit the fan, as we call it, yet, right? And at the same time, we have the market going back. So we have two different opinions about what's going on in the city, and especially the city. It's true for the tri-state area, but especially the city, just like you said, everybody fled, everybody went out, everybody went to the Hamptons, New Jersey, and who knows where. The question is, are we going to see the valuations go down in the longer term in terms of 2 years from now, a year from now? And also, you have those people who are, you know, they look at it as a chaos. Maybe 10 years, the market will go back. It won't back before 10 years. And then you have those where next year's back. What do you see? Where do you think the market in New York City is going back? Because we saw what's going in retail. We saw what happened in the market. We saw what's going on. At the same time, people are coming back. Where's the balance? Where are the valuations coming back? Where is the New York City we all love and know is coming back to us?
So I think
you don't have a crystal ball. I'm just asking.
No, it's a great question. And a lot of people do ask. And a lot of people, I mean, if you read the papers, there's a lot of negativity out there. I think that negativity is overbearing and sometimes, very inclusive. I mean, I don't think you can look at New York City as an inclusion of all product types, all properties. I think right. You have to look at each one of the asset classes and kind of analyze it and look at the headwinds and tailwinds of what's happening in New York City. So I think the first thing is, if you look at the residential market, I definitely think the worst is behind us. And I said that before, and I want to reiterate that. I think rents are now has stabilized, vacancy rates are going down. Sales of condominiums, we're not in that business, but we know that from our friends and from data, that sales of condominiums have started in the biggest possible way. Yes, prices are down, and prices have come down in every asset class, but also in residential and rentals and, you know, condominiums. So prices have gone down. They're not going down anymore. So they've stabilized where they are. They're not going to go up probably in the next 6 months, but they'll start coming up slowly but surely as we move forward. And that's the residential market. So I have a lot of optimism, very cautious optimism, moving forward with the residential market on all of its subsegments, including for sale apartments in New York City. So if you ever thought about buying an apartment in New York City, that's probably your time. If you are a young person thinking about coming to New York City, you probably want to rent an apartment right now. And if you can do and lock in a 2-year lease, do it. I think we've seen the worst, and this is probably it. In terms of pricing of residential buildings, they've come down drastically since HSTPA. They've come down a little bit more in 2020, and we're starting to see the increase over the past quarter. So I'll give you an example. If you look at multifamily buildings, price per square foot in the first quarter of 2020, the price was about $718 a foot. In the third quarter of 2020, it was $587 a foot. You saw a blip. Part of it is because there were not enough transactions. And the first quarter of 2020, although there were not enough transactions, the price went up to 713. So we're already seeing some stabilization in pricing, not the residential market. Now let's go to the office market. The office market will take longer to recover. The leases right. in the office market are longer. People are making more cautious decisions. It's not just COVID that changed it. It's also the supply of office space that is on the market, has been on the market pre-COVID-19 is a big item. So I think
I'm stopping you. It's also the perspective of people. They can work from home all of a sudden, and they see, oh my gosh, I can work from home, and they don't have to come to the office as much, right?
Yeah, so the working from home is a good phenomenon, right? And you have to ask yourself whether companies are going to be a work from home companies or office centric companies or somewhere in between. And I think for the most part, companies that were office centric are going to continue to be office centric. I can tell you about us. We're going to continue to be office centric. What's also interesting is to see how many landlords today are implementing flex office spaces within their buildings. So they're putting the WeWorks of the world and not necessarily WeWork, but they're putting systems in place to allow for flexible office moving forward, which means to me that as a renter or as a small business or as a sole proprietor, if you wanted to rent space out of your house, you can do it pretty inexpensively today, and you'll be able to do almost every building. You'll be able to choose the building you want to live in as an office, which is pretty interesting. So I think the office market has longer ways to go, but I do think it'll recover. It's just going to take, you know, prices will come down further. And I think, again, from a business perspective, in my opinion, that's an opportunity again to start looking and start locking in.
Also for private equity groups and capital out there, you think so? Because some people say right now is the time, and some people say in 6 months is the time because you have different type of, you know, things going on in the market.
I think it also depends on who you are, right? So if you look at 2020 in terms of leasing spaces, I mean, the technology industry took about 1.8 million square feet. Okay. That's Netflix. That's TikTok.
Yeah.
You saw Amazon buying close to $1 billion building, and Lord & Taylor's on Fifth Avenue. So these are companies that believe in New York City and believe that their employees want to be here long term. That's the only reason, in my opinion, they're leasing space. Right. So I think overall there's a lot of belief in the city, but there's oversupply that will have to be absorbed over the next few years. So that's office. Then you have retail. Retail started a downward trajectory many years before COVID. Probably we started seeing it in 16 or 17. And I think that trend will continue. I think that the retail market will have to reinvent itself. I think that in a way, there's going to be some mitigation of that because there's a lot of small businesses now that, again, can come into the city and never could come into the city because the pricing is going to be lower. Due to COVID, there were some restaurants and bars, especially in smaller neighborhoods, that left. And that's another opportunity for a restaurant or bar operator to take over an older lease or even negotiate with a landlord in some respect for the short term so they can put their business up and running and not put a lot of investment into the space. So there's opportunities there that might mitigate the retail issues that are out there. But the retail world will have to invent itself or reinvent itself. The fact that cannabis might be legal in New York City might help a little bit. There's different small factors that are happening that might help move retail along, but retail is definitely something that is an issue. And the last thing is hospitality. In the hospitality space, we've, you know, clearly COVID affected. I mean, this is the one aspect of the distress that really came out of this of 2020. We've seen some distress go through the system. There'll be a little bit more distress go through the system with regards to hospitality and hotels. I think that is where you'll see longer period to recover because of the element of travel, the element of business travel, which probably will be on the lower end for the foreseen future. I just think bigger companies will travel less, right, and international tourism will take longer to recover. So that's my realistic prediction for New York City. Overall, I think the worst is behind us. I think we're moving forward towards recovery. Different asset classes will recover differently.
Tell me something before we say goodbye. I have two things that I'm very curious about and I would like to hear from you. First of all, let's talk about Brooklyn and Queens a little bit. What's going on? What do you think there? Because that's a bit of a different story. Some similar, but some things are very, very different than what's going on in the city in terms of condo sales, in terms of multifamily, in terms of all that residential aspect in those areas. And also, if you could touch as a cherry, you know, on the Sunday, as we call it. We all know, and it's not a political show, I don't touch anything political, but we can't not talk about the 1031 exchange that is going through a turmoil right now. And we don't know what will happen. But what is your take in terms of what it could do to the market? And what type of a market could it be if that would come about, that there will be no more 1031 exchange, which we know from, I think, the early 1900s. So if you could touch that, about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think let's start with Brooklyn and Queens. I think in Brooklyn in general, I mean, things are improving much, much faster. I mean, so Brooklyn went through a transformation over the past 10, 15 years where Brooklyn is a borough, but it's really a city on its own. So if you want to live in Brooklyn, you want to live in Brooklyn. You don't live in Brooklyn just because you can't live in Manhattan for the most part. And that's really different than what it was 10, 15 years ago. And I think because of that, you see a lot of demand for the borough. We actually just sold a vacant lot. Sean Kelly and his team and Matt Davis, both from my company, just closed on a vacant lot that's going to be developed as a condominium building, which tells you that that's how a developer looks at Brooklyn. I mean, they see the demand. This is a developer who has two or three other projects. He's selling buildings. And the sellouts are probably around or less than $1,000 a foot, maybe a little bit more than $1,000 a foot. So the price points also make sense. The residential rental market experience, especially on the higher end in Brooklyn, experienced very similar things that Manhattan did during COVID, but you see rentals coming back sooner to Brooklyn than other places. And something similar is happening in Queens. Well, that's a little bit different. What I'm seeing in Queens never has the same amount of velocity, the same amount of transactions, especially if you talk about the multifamily asset class, So in a way, when you have a multifamily asset to sell in Brooklyn, even if it's completely rent stabilized, the pricing you get there is at a premium. Many local owners, especially on the smaller stuff, you know, below 20 million, below 50 million, many local owners who want to amass a portfolio are bidding on that. So it's a very localized market that, in a way, because of lack of supply, produces a lot of good activity. Then you asked about politics. Politics are tough, and they're tough in the city. They've been tough. I mean, again, the evidence is HSTPA, and they're tough nationwide. The 1031 tax deferred exchange is something that has been out there for decades. And I think that in a way, it just, what it does, it keeps capital in real estate. So what it does is essentially, when you sell a piece of real estate, if you took the proceeds and reinvested them in a building, in another asset, in another real estate piece, you're not paying the capital gains today, you're moving your liability to the next building. All you do is you defer the taxes.
Right.
But you also keep the money in real estate versus paying the taxes and going to the stock market or paying the taxes and doing something else with it. And right. It's very, very healthy for the nation in general to make sure that buildings, that real estate that needs so much capital and so much investment, that money doesn't run away from the asset class. So, I mean, I hope that the 1031 tax deferred exchange stays. I think it's a smart move to keep it intact. And I think that's a lot of what's moving this nation in general. I don't know if I'm helpful here, but I'm trying not to be political. I'm just trying from an analytical perspective.
I agree with you on that one. And I think that's one of the major things that drive also international investors into America, into New
Absolutely.
York. Absolutely. Into everywhere in America, actually, to go in. It also drives those that we didn't touch that part. It's less of your genre. You obviously know that. But the single tenant, you know, this whole thing of retail, that the single tenant asset class.
Triple net leases.
Exactly. Yeah. People, triple net leases, exactly. And people run after that. Even if they're not savvy real estate investors, they don't have to be what we call understanding the know all in the market or professionals in the market, and they can actually buy something that is being all they get is a check and it's all taken care of. So I think that would be a shame, you know, to drive also all those investors pretty much away. Anyways, Shimon, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate your time. Thank you. And you guys, I hope
you can find out
all those all the links of Ariel Advisors. Up or above or below, wherever you guys are seeing it. I'm going to see you in the next show. Take care, you guys. Hey, guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.